and I'm back. Oh God! Pins and needles.
Are you okay?
Pins and needles. Dennis, why did it only happen when I sat down?
Am I calling 000 or are you okay?
No. It's just a rush of blood and nerves to my leg. I can't move it. I'm not quite close enough to the microphone, but I can't really move. Oh, fuck.
You'll be alright. You're alright.
Yeah. I get it like really intensely. Oh. Hello again there, Squires, and welcome to another episode of Squirecast. This is episode number, and I can't be fucked looking it up because we've had a whole bunch of issues.
It's 2022, I think. I mean,
is it 22? Because did 21 happen?
21 was the one you reviewed this morning.
That's gonna happen in the future. That's gonna happen at a predetermined date, which happens to be next week.
But when is this episode coming out?
Couple of days.
Episode 21 of Squirecast.
Episode 21 of Squirecast. Alright, so previously to recording this episode, we did record a live episode, which, through the magic of Windows, is lost to the ether. It wasn't saved, because just after we finished recording, I had to go leave and pick up my girlfriend from the train station. I closed my laptop that we were recording on, and that should be a perfectly normal thing for a laptop to do, but unfortunately, my laptop decided to blue screen whilst transitioning out of sleep mode, so we lost everything.
So we now have...
Actually, look, technically not everything, right? Because we had like that 20 minutes or whatever at the start. Oh. So we recorded the first bit.
So, right, the bit where we were just at the table up until my weird card of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I mean, we could probably salvage some of that, but...
Maybe.
Not worth it.
So, I am joined this week. By the way, I'm Matt. I will be your lovely goblin guide for this week, as I am... Well, at least try to be each and every week. And I am joined this time on Squirecast by... Well, I guess you are the most persistent co-host at this point, Stephen.
Yay, Stephen.
Yeah.
Good
job.
That's okay. I'm here. Hello.
So, what's new with you this week, Stephen?
Nothing really.
Excellent.
I didn't end up doing anything Dragons and Tarkir related, because I can't afford it.
Ah, that's but fair that, enough. That's
but
one of the...
really hoping to crack into a fat pack sometime soon. How about you,
that
Matt?
Should be good. Well, I mean, I talked about this on the previous recording, but that's lost to the other, so I'll talk about it here again. I went to two Dragons of Tarkir pre-releases. Really, really, really enjoyed it. I gotta say, I'm a big fan of this set. We're talking about how on previous episodes, you know, we haven't really exactly been that happy or excited, I guess, for this set. There's nothing that's really grabbed a lot of our attentions and gone, whoa. But, playing the sealed environment, it's very fun, very, very balanced, and, there's a lot of cool things you can do. A lot of really nice synergy, and the pre-release is, of course, fantastic, just atmosphere in general. So, I went to the Friday midnight pre-release, and I went to a Saturday, pre-release as well, at our local shop, Good Games, Joondalup. Check them out.
Hey yo!
They're a great shop.
No, they're not sponsoring us, but we kick in for them anyway.
Yes. It's sort of a verbal partnership where we're like, hey, we'll talk about you guys, and they're like, sweet.
Go for it.
I still don't know if they actually believe us that we have like a podcast, you know? Like we'll be like, hey, you know, we have a podcast. And they're like, cool, great, talk about us if you want to.
Well.
These guys. So, it was really good fun. Out of 8 rounds, we played 4 rounds for each pre-release. I won 7 of them. So I went 3-1 at the Friday midnight and I went 4-0. At the Saturday pre-release. Pre-release is, of course, a pretty casual environment, but technically speaking, I came first.
Yay.
So, yay.
That's the name of your sex tape.
Technically, I came first.
Oh, brilliant. Yes.
And I just want to briefly touch on my pool, because it was kind of amazing. Like, I opened so many bombs, it was ridiculous. But the 4 that really stand out to me were Sarkhan, Unbroken, opened him the Friday midnight pre-release. Didn't play him because, of course, he's three colors, and this set doesn't have a lot of fixing in it. Basically, Evolving Wilds is, like, and, like, the monuments are, like, the only real ways to fix, aside from, like, Explosive Vegetation. So, pretty hard, especially seeing as I was playing a Culligan red-black deck. Didn't really want to splash for two other colors. Then, at the Saturday pre-release, I opened Sarkhan Unbroken, so I now have two. And I also opened a Narset Transcendent, so two pre-releases, three Planeswalkers, all up, like, $150 value, which is fucking ridiculous.
Man, that's awesome.
And, I splashed for my Narset in my Dromoka pool, even though she wasn't needed at all, because she doesn't really do a whole bunch in Limited, like, at all. Because all she does is interact with, like, instants and sorceries or non-creature spells, of which I think my deck had, like, seven. One spell of which was actually good to copy. Because I had a whole bunch of, like, you know, spells that interacted with, like, attacking and blocking. So if you give it rebound, it comes in at the next upkeep and does nothing. So that's cool. But I played her because playing a Planeswalker in Limited is, if you've never experienced this before, is really good fun because it makes your opponent play very weirdly. Just something about having a Planeswalker on the battlefield when they're not expecting it makes your opponent rethink their decisions in ways that aren't necessarily all that great. Like, she wasn't doing anything at all. She was just plussing, and I would occasionally look at the top card of my library and go, nah, can't draw that, just put it back on top. That's all she was doing. But they would attack her. They would, like, devote resources to try and get her off the board, even though she was doing nothing. So, basically, I was playing this 4-mana, really pretty-looking life gain spell, I guess, that was letting me look at the top cards in my library. Which is not a great card, but fun to play, you know. So, Narset, of course, is gonna be amazing in whatever other formats aside from that. And I'm sure Callum would love to get his hands on one.
Ah, he's not the only one, and you're not the only one.
Absolutely.
Also, 6 loyalty is ridiculous.
Yeah, and then plus ability, she goes to 7. For 4 mana is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it was like, if my opponent did actually try to kill her, they were putting a lot of work into trying to kill her. But the other bomb that I opened was one that I really, really enjoyed playing, and is going to be a Tiny Leaders deck. I opened Anafenza, Kintree Spirit, as my pre-release promo in my Dromoka box, and I think, without a doubt, Anafenza the Kintree Spirit in pre-release foil is my favorite-looking Magic card all time. Fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, that's
so
really
pretty.
Good.
Like, shout out to, so exceptionally pretty.
Shout out to Ryan Yee and the foil process for that card as well.
Shout out to the foil process.
Because that art is amazing too.
Yeah, shout out to, like, March 21st dated on her. So she's fantastic. She was the white for a 2/2 spirit soldier, legendary creature. Whenever a creature hits the battlefield under your control, a non-token creature, bolster 1. Which seems like a pretty neat effect, but in, like, especially in Limited, it just proved so powerful. Like, just the ability to play a creature and just throw a +1/+1 counter on the smallest guy meant that my team was always of a consistently large size and just kept getting bigger. And, very, very, very cool. Very, yeah. Very powerful too.
See, I would love to run an Anafenza Kintree Spirit in a, white-green, commander deck as well. You know, you got cards like, was it from Shards of Alara, Sigil Captain? You know, when a creature, when a 1/1 comes into play, put 2+1/+1 counters on it if you control it. Juniper Order Ranger as well, I think, from...
Yeah, that's whenever another creature hits, put a +1/+1 counter on it and Juniper Ranger, I think.
Yeah. You know, even Ivy Lane Denizen from, Gatecrash, you know. So, you know, nice, and with the Abzan Counterlords as well. Oh, yeah. Man, it's a good time to be Abzan.
Anafenza, Kintree Spirit is going to be my third Tiny Leaders deck now. So I'm going to have a mono red, a mono black, and a mono white, because Mardu, yeah! Well,
for a deck that was called Rough on Sunday, yeah. It actually performed really well. So in the lost episode, sorry, the second lost episode of Squirecast, Our friend of the cast, or I guess fellow co-host at this point, fellow co-host Chris was playing with Matt and a Fenza deck, which he said he had done that morning and wasn't quite finished, apparently. And still, you know, the board state was ridiculous. Just everything just out. It was just like clockwork. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I basically threw together a whole bunch of just like solid white creatures that were, you know, 1, 2, and 3 drops, and backed them up with pretty solid white removal or bolster cards, and the deck just performed admirably. It was fantastic. Even just simple things like the Born of the Gods or whatever, that you have hexproof, the enchantment creature, Aegis of the Gods.
That's the one, yeah.
2/1 for 1 and a white. Like, he just comes in, he's got 1 toughness, so he's probably going to get bolstered onto. He becomes a 3/2 for 2 that says you have hexproof, which is just surprisingly powerful.
Yeah, oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, so very, very fun. And big shout-out to Good Games, Junelot, for throwing a fantastic pre-release. The dice game proved surprisingly fun. My store didn't run into any problems that I've been seeing on the internet of having not as many promos. I do believe at the end of Saturday they were running out, because they were only given so many, so I don't know how Sunday went for them, but as far as I know, when I was there, it was alright. But I have heard of other pre-releases in other parts of the world where they've run out of promos, and, basically just had to say sorry to people even though they get great scores, which is disappointing.
Aw, that's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking to James, that runs the store, he says that he got a whole bunch of like Evolving Wilds, like the base level promo, and a fair bunch of the ones in the middle, the Dragon Fodder and the Dragon Lord Servant. But the one that you get for getting 18 points or higher, the Foe Raiser Regent, he got like 7, maybe 6.
What?
And I saw at least 3 or 4 people on Saturday alone get that score. It proved pretty hard to get, but I saw one guy get 40.
What do you do? Did he just take the entire set home with him, or?
He basically just, like, it's pretty fantastic, actually. He pegged the dice so hard at the board. You were instructed to throw it, not, like, peg it, but he did. And it bounced right off the back wall and hit into his own chest. And basically just shifted the entire set slightly backwards, and all the pegs just fell over. Bounced off his chest and landed on the double square.
Nice.
It was fucking amazing. And James was like, well, you know what? That counts.
Matt, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry to derail this, but I think I had a realization.
Yeah?
Okay. All right. Anafenza, Kintry Spirit.
Yes.
Oh, it's non-token. Far out. Still, though, Anafenza, Kintry Spirit, and Pentavus, that's
not
a bad idea.
It's not a great idea.
Not a great idea, but you can, I just...
Yeah. That was like, I put the Anafenza deck on Tapped Out, and I'll link it in the show notes. But one of the guys commenting on there commented for Secure the Wastes, which is the X and a white instant make X11, white warrior tokens.
Yeah.
And I was like, that doesn't do anything in this deck. I don't have any warrior tribal. It says non-token.
Oh.
Anyway.
So sorry. I thought I had a realization and I didn't. This
wouldn't be the first time.
This is exactly why the thing, the secret episode. That's it. Just shut up.
If you're wondering what Steven is talking about, just wait.
Just in your chair right now, just wait until it happens.
Yeah. Just, you know, casually look off into the middle distance and go, yeah, I'm waiting. All right, well, talking about pre-releases, we'll transition really well into our topic for this week. But before that, we want to talk about a couple of weird cards. Now, my one is one that I talked about on the Lost episode, but of course that doesn't matter to you, because you can't hear the Lost episode. It's literally gone. It's not like I can salvage it from somewhere, and it's got bad audio. It's gone.
It doesn't exist. It's not the recoverable episode. It is the Lost episode.
Yeah, maybe one day when technology is good enough, I'll be able to recover that. Why exactly I would invest such good technology into that, I don't know, but
next time, Control S. We'll all just get on that and Control S it in a queue.
The thing is, I believe the menu popped up for, like, choose the location for saving this, and all I would have had to do was just hit save, and it would have saved, like, untitled as the name for the document, but we didn't. So there's that. But
it's okay.
Is it alright for me to go into my weird card for the week first?
Absolutely.
Alright, well, I would love to. So, the weird card I'm tackling, for my go-to weird set, which is Ice Age. Ice Age is a fantastic set because it's got a lot of nice, really weird flavor. And, of course it has snow as like one of its main mechanics, so that has a whole bunch of weirdness to it. But this is Avalanche. Now, Avalanche is a red sorcery for X, 2 red. So, 4 mana base, and then X on top of that. Now, what does Avalanche do? Well, you can probably guess from the name that it interacts with snow, probably lands of some kind. But it's a destructive force, because it's an avalanche, so what does it do? Well, it destroys X target snow lands. Which is fucking ridiculous.
I mean, if you're playing against Callum's mono red EDH deck with Norrin and all those snow-covered mountains, absolutely. Wait, no, you removed them. It's no use. Oh, he didn't?
Did he?
I don't know if he had. See, Callum's not on the episode this week, because it's his birthday today. Happy birthday, yeah. Callum. You should
Happy
be here.
Happy birthday, Callum.
You should be here to talk about your friggin' snow-covered lands. Anyway, I would never main deck this.
Of course not.
However,
I play this.
I saw an interesting comment on the card, which is by a gentleman or lady, Gman92. Burning wish into this in EDH for people who love running snow-covered lands with scrying sheets and extra planar lens. Hooray! I mean,
pretty funny to look at their face when you use a crappy card to turn an unorthodox strategy against them.
I'm so glad we both get, well, we're on the same page here. Yeah.
So land destruction used to be a thing in Magic. Still technically exists, but in a lot less quantity. Destruction used to be like a strategy, and of course, a very unfun one, because if there's something that comes from stopping your opponent from doing literally anything in the game of Magic that has this unfun element to it. Surprise, surprise. So, Avalanche is actually not that great of a land destruction spell, even though it can destroy a whole bunch, because...
Yeah.
Think about it like this. Stone Rain, the archetypical land destruction spell, costs 2 and a red, destroys a land. Avalanche costs 4, and then X on top of that. So to destroy one land, which has to be snow, it costs 5. So that's 2 mana more. Now, when you hit 6, so when you're paying 6 mana for this, you destroy 2 lands. That's a double Stone Rain, so that's alright. Again, restricted to snow. But once you hit 7 mana, putting 3 into X, that's when it actually becomes, like, worth it, I guess? But then you're paying 7 mana to cut your opponent off their lands. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of cutting your opponent off their lands is so that you can cut them off before they can do things. And if you're doing that at turn 7,
yeah.
Sorry, mate, but your opponent's probably already done something.
No, it's... Yeah, it's... At that point, it just doesn't seem worth it. I mean, in mono red, with that amount of mana, would you not rather, I don't know, Decree of Annihilation? You know, yes, it puts you off your lands as well, but by that point, by the time you're at that much mana, you should have some stuff going on. Also, my problem with Avalanche is that it's a snow-covered hoser. Who uses snow-covered lands except, you know, Callum?
Except just people that want to pimp things out because it's funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, snow is like this niche strategy. It's something that has like a cool element to it. And there's some interesting strategies that go along with it. Like, you know, you get to run something like Skred, which is a cool spell.
Yeah.
Skred is an instant for single red that deals damage to a creature equal to the most snow permanents you control. So if you're running mono snow covered lands, it's actually a pretty damn good spell. But go ahead.
No, it's okay. You go first.
Okay. The problem I have with Avalanche is that Avalanche is a torrent of snow, so why does it destroy snow-covered land?
That, you bastard, you beat me to it.
Yeah, and I mean, the main thing.
And the thing is, so snow falls on top of your land. Does it stop existing?
I mean, apparently.
You can draw mana from snow-covered lands. As a multiverse-spanning planeswalker, you can still draw mana from snow-covered stuff. That's kind of why snow-covered lands exist. But, so you cover it with more snow and now you can't?
Yeah.
What?
I feel like this spell could just, it doesn't need to be, like, destroy X target snow lands, because that's not an effect that needs to exist within the game. using something like Avalanche, even in this block, could be interesting, because you could be like, X, red, and two, put X snow counters on X target lands, those lands become snow, and then deal damage to each creature an opponent controls, or just each creature, equal to the amount of snow permanents on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it covers all the things with snow, because it's an avalanche, and then it kills things, because it's an avalanche.
I tell you what I'd rather run instead of this card. I was looking at it before.
Anything else?
Well, a card with a similar ability. So, there are very few destroy X lands things out there that aren't ludicrously expensive, but there's a 5-mana enchantment from Urza's Saga, called Rumbling Crescendo. Right?
Oh, yes.
During your upkeep, you may put a verse counter on it, and you can pay a red and sacrifice Rumbling Crescendo to destroy up to X target lands, where X is the number of verse counters. So, okay, in order to destroy 3 lands with 3 snow-covered lands, you need, what, 7 or 8 mana?
7 mana.
Yeah, so you only need 5. So, okay, it'll take you 7 turns to get that many lands out, okay? To just, you know...
At minimum.
Like, for 1 turn extra... You can destroy 3 any lands, basically. And if you cheat Rumbling Crescendo into play, you can do that much earlier. Because it's a permanent as well. There are a lot, you know, there are ways to sort of cheat them into play. I would rather run that.
Right, yeah. If you're going to blow up lands, there's better ways to do it.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, what is your weird card for this week? It's definitely interesting.
Yeah, I know. Okay, yeah, so... Weird cards have always been around, for as long as we've known. And this card is from Alpha, just to prove that the weirdness was there from the beginning. There is a white creature in Alpha called Personal Incarnation. It's an avatar incarnation for 3 and 3 white, okay? The card text reads, pay 0. The next 1 damage that would be dealt to Personal Incarnation this turn is dealt to its owner instead. Any player may activate this ability, but only if he or she owns Personal Incarnation. When Personal Incarnation dies, its owner loses half his or her life rounded up, and it's a 6/6. So, yeah.
Well, you know, okay, so let's base level here. 6/6 for 6. In white? That's alright.
It's alright, especially at the time, too.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a big creature. The activated ability, where you can send damage that we dealt to it, to basically you, like it's worded weirdly, but it basically just says you, the person that played Personal Incarnation. It saves it, I guess. It seems very white that you're like you have this creature that you're like, you know what? You're getting hit with a lightning bolt. That's bad. Because they wouldn't kill it. You're getting hit with a blasphemous act. It's dealing 13 damage to you. You know what? I'll take that for you. That's cool. I need you alive, so I'm gonna take the hit to my face. The problem is that when it dies, you also lose half your life.
Yeah, that's the deal breaker for me. Like, I could handle the first half, but nah.
Yeah, like, now, do you want to... the original printed text is, of course, from Alpha, so it's quite interesting. You know, it's, of course, Caster... So it just says Caster. Caster can redirect any or all damage... done to Personal Incarnation to self instead. That's not a sentence. The source of the damage is unchanged. Also not a sentence. If Personal Incarnation is destroyed, Caster loses half his or her remaining life points, rounded up the loss. Rounding up the loss.
Yeah. So, nice wording, asshole. Okay, can I just say, this card is rated slightly higher than Avalanche. Right, that's right, right? However, what I've noticed is, even with the worst cards that we've done on Weird Card Hospital, you look at the comments on Gatherer, and there'll always be one person who tries to justify the card's existence. You know, there's, with Avalanche, you got the guy who said, the person who says, Burning Wish into it an EDH and hose snow-covered lands. Awesome. There is none of that in Personal Incarnation. Just everyone going, this is shit.
Yeah, and some of the comments bring up some really good points, right? That, after all, it is my personal incarnation, so I expect it to be at least as tough as me. then I would get something out of the deal, like a potentially huge creature that's like equal to your life total or something like that. Think like something like Sarah Avatar, you know?
Yeah.
With power and toughness equal to your life total. That seems like a much better use of the name Personal Incarnation.
There is an alternate artwork, actually. There's a...
Oh, really?
Fifth edition got new art. But...
That would make sense. Fifth edition always got new art. I think that was the set where everything got new artwork.
Well, I prefer that to the friggin' alpha artwork. Kev Brockschmidt, right? I'm sure Kev is a respected artist who's done a lot of amazing work, but Personal Incarnation just... The Personal Incarnation looks like he's just cock-thrusted that guy off-screen. You could see the guy being billowed away. It looks like he's just done a pelvic thrust and he's gone...
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you can see it, right?
I can't see it. There's even like a thing coming out of his chest too.
Yeah. He's just done a massive pelvic thrust.
And he's made of lightning or something. Yeah. That's weird as hell. So, weird card. don't like it. I could see myself running something like Children of Corlys with this as like a backup. Children of Corlys is a 1/1 or a 0/1 for a single white that has sacrificed Children of Corlys. Gain life equal to the amount of life you lost. Yes. Have my Personal Incarnation, have him take a whole bunch. Oh shit, he died, I lost a whole bunch, and it's gain it back.
And what was the other thing? There was actually I was gonna throw in one of the other weird cards we've worked with. What was the enchantment we had where you could pay one mana that shares the color with the card that is with the source that chuck that on Personal Incarnation. Everything's fun.
I
can't remember what it's called, but basically with that enchantment you could pay one mana of the color of the source of the damage to prevent that damage.
Yeah.
Like.
That doesn't
I mean it doesn't fix it, but
let's move on. This card is so bad it's hurting my brain.
Once we've done enough Weird Card Hospital, we should make a Weird Card Hospital deck.
Yeah, maybe.
Singleton and just go for it. See what happens.
Something like, give someone a random selection of like 5 cards and say that they have to build a deck that utilizes at least 3 of them.
It'd be like a really sadistic story circle.
Or fuck it, right? Put all of them in a single pile. Like, okay, every single one of our weird cards, Singleton, enormous pile, like a wizard's tower, right in the middle of the thing, and everyone plays like mini masters.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Where they just draw a card and can cast, like, they draw like 3 cards, that's their opening hand, and they all share a graveyard, and they can cast 1 spell a turn.
That's a good idea.
That sounds fucking horrible, but I love it.
Reject
rares ahoy.
I think that's it for weird cards.
I think it is. And I think it's time to move into a little bit of our main topic for this week. What I'm talking about this week is something that I always tend to find myself doing. It's whenever I come back from a pre-release, like I just have done, or maybe I've bought a box of something, or I've bought a fat pack, or like happened with our friend Robbie recently. He was just sort of giving away some cards that he just had lying around, didn't have anywhere he could put them. When you just acquire a whole bunch of cards, especially some of them that really catch your eye, you find yourself looking at the decks that you already have and going, I really want to play this spell. Maybe I should look at something in my commander deck that, this would be great in there. And it's trying to find things to take out so that you can put new things in. So that's what I want to talk about this week is that entire process of, what takes a new, like, what is it about a new card that makes you want to throw it in a deck? And, how do you go about rationalizing putting it in? How do you rationalize taking things out? Because that can be a pretty hard process, things to take out.
And it can be unexpectedly gut-wrenching as well, especially when you realize that a card that you desperately love doesn't work in your deck anymore.
Yeah, you know? that is a hard truth to swallow.
Or switching out a commander in a oh man.
Mm. I have been through the process of changing a commander, which radically changed the entire deck, and I'm very glad I did, but at the time, was quite difficult.
Yeah. I would love to... Actually, I might just see if we can do it in the show notes or maybe do it in another episode, but I actually have a record of my Intet the Dreamer deck at three very different stages of where it was. Because it started out...
Interesting.
It started out as a... It started out as two different intro packs that I threw together when I got a copy of Niv-Mizzet the Firemind. And so it
wow.
So it was... So it was two intro decks. I took two intro decks and turned them into a 60-card, just, you know, just a casual deck. And then...
Like straight out? Just, like, right together?
Oh, no. I mean, I did some sort of creative editing, but, like, that... Okay. Like, that was the first time I'd ever... That was only the second deck I've ever built, because the first one was my Vampires deck. And then... A friend of mine introduced me to EDH and said, hey, look, I've got a copy of Niv-Mizzet the Firemind. Do you want to learn how to play EDH? Oh, okay, I need a 100-card deck. Well, I've got the 60-card deck, might as well do something. So, bought a couple more cards. So it just went from a 60-card mixed deck. Two different decks, 60-card mixed deck, then padded, because I think it was literally every single red and blue card that I owned at the time, into this 100-card deck. And then, the same friend convinced me to run Riku as a commander instead of Niv-Mizzet. And then it became a three-color deck, and then Intet. So, I'd love to do a little timeline of that as well, because your decks can change quite drastically over time, too.
Yeah. That's quite fascinating to hear about. Like, it went through that entire process.
Yeah, I'll see if I can actually find the... I know that there's a record of the Niv-Mizzet deck somewhere. But anyway, carry on.
Now, I know I don't have the process. Again, sort of off topic, but I don't have the recorded process, maybe like you do. But my Zergo Helm Smasher ADH deck in its current build is actually I don't know if actually it has any of the original elements from the deck, but it's definitely something that in some form or another has been an evolution of a deck I started with. I remember when I first got into Magic, the first deck that I think I really enjoyed playing was the Boros event deck that I bought. I bought the event deck, and I think I played that as it was for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I eventually acquired a copy of Tajik, Blade of the Legion, at the Dragon's Maze pre-release. I got a regular copy. I was looking for a foil, because I really liked the card, and I got that later. And I turned it into a commander deck. And then over time, changed the deck. And then over time again, when Zergo Helmsmasher came out, switched to Zergo Helmsmasher for Tajik, changed the deck entirely because it now had black in it, and made it about Zergo. And I love this deck to bits. And like I said, I don't think it actually contains any of the original parts, aside from maybe, like, mountains and the plains.
That's awesome.
But it's a deck that has basically been with me the entirety of Magic.
Actually, that is just as interesting, because it started out as your, you know, it was your Tajik deck for such a long time, too.
Yeah.
Ah, like, so happy.
Chronicles of Decks, yeah. Cause, like, so the evolution of decks is always something that's interesting, because they don't just necessarily pop out of the ether, you know? They, especially with people that play often, and, like ourselves, where we're constantly sort of retooling and maybe rebuilding entire decks, decks change. They always change. And it's good for them to change, because Magic is a constantly changing game, and I think if your deck stays the same, unless there's a reason for it, like those are explicitly the best cards for that build, then, you know, I think your deck should always be evolving.
Yay. So, as a deck builder, it's always good to look back and see how your thought process has differed back then to now.
Absolutely.
I look at my Niv-Mizzet deck and go, why the fuck was that in there? I'll try and find an example. I'm still trying to find the user, because it's not a person I really speak to very much anymore. But anyway, one sec while I squeak my chair.
Yeah. I have a very similar thing with you know, Tajik, which then became Zergo. Like, I had some fucking ridiculous cards in Tajik. Like, I don't know why I played it. I managed to do actually fairly well with that deck, but it kind of crumbled to a whole bunch of, like, actually well-constructed commander decks. But what we're going to talk about this week is, you know, so let's say I've just come back from the pre-release, right? Which I have. And I acquired, like, a whole bunch of just rares and things like that that were hanging around. And I'm looking at my decks, especially my commander decks, because those are... Well, they're centered around a theme, but they tend to be quite, best of or like, you know, here's a whole bunch of good stuff kind of thing, mm-hmm. dot deck. And I know your intent deck is actually quite similar to that. It's role players for the kind of strategy you want to do, and then what you're doing is, here's a whole bunch of stuff that I like.
Yeah.
And, you know, my Zergo deck is a very similar thing. It's, big, powerful creatures, things that help Zergo, things that help me be aggressive, and then just ways to wipe all the creatures off the board. But there's nothing specific about each of those categories. What those are, can change.
Yeah.
And, it's kind of sort of a good stuff compilation. You know, things that are working for me right now, things that I really like, things that play well in my playgroup, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
So what I'm thinking about especially is looking at, so let's say, okay, let's take my Zergo deck for example, right? I'm talking about one of my decks, but, you know, this applies to a lot of other people's decks. So I've come back from the pre-release, and I have these two, dragons that I pulled. Now, my deck is red, white, black. And I pulled a white dragon and a black dragon. Specifically, two cards from the Regent cycle. I pulled Sunscorch Regent, which is the white one. It's a 3-white-white 4/3 flyer that whenever an opponent casts a spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Sunscorch Regent and gain one life. And Deathbringer Regent, which is the black one, which for 5 black-black is a 5/6 flyer that when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it from your hand and there are 5 or more creatures on the battlefield, destroy all other. So, on their own, these are pretty good cards. But the reason that I was looking at these cards especially is because they play very well into what I want to do with Zergo, which, in the case of Deathbringer Regent, is blow up all the things, and Sunscorch Regent, which is make my opponent rethink how they're playing their spells, or kind of punish them. But this is not really necessarily punishing them, it's just giving me a bigger dude and gaining some life.
Yeah.
Which is like inadvertently punishing my opponent, you know? Oh, you had to play a spell, but my guy got bigger and I gained some life. So, looking at these two cards, I was like, man, those are really things that I want to play. You know, those are, like, these are, I mean, they're a 5-drop and a 7-drop. They are, a little bit more expensive than some of the things in the deck, but it's Commander. You know, you play big things. So, it got me looking at my deck and going, well, look, I was really happy with, the deck as it was, but maybe there's a couple of things that could be better, you know?
Yeah.
And that process of taking things out and putting new things in is quite difficult, but what I was able to find, looking at the Deathbringer region, was I had a card in my commander deck called Reaver Demon, which for 4, black, 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 so 8 mana all up, it's a 6/6 flyer, demon, that when you cast it from your hand, destroy all non-artifact, non-black creatures, they can't be regenerated, which you might recognize as a similar effect to the Deathbringer read. But, and I was talking to Steven about this before the cast, whilst the effects are kind of similar, one, Deathbringer region is easier to cast. It's only got 2 black instead of 4 black, and I'm in a 3-color deck, which is, I can cast Reaver Demon, it's just sometimes a little bit difficult. 2, Deathbringer region is cheaper, not just in easy-to-cast mana, but it's actually a mana cheaper. And 3, it actually just straight-up destroys all the creatures, not just non-black, non-artifact. And 4, it actually has this rider that I like a downside, where it doesn't blow everything up unless there's a certain amount of things. So that was a pretty easy change, but I don't know if you have anything to add to this, Steven, but like sometimes the changes aren't all that obvious, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of an example of how to say that. I had to sort of demonstrate that.
Yeah. I have one. The thing that I took out for the Sunscorch region, the white dragon, because I have put these two cards in my deck, isn't a card that's related to the dragon at all. Doesn't fulfill the same role, but it's a card that, in playing it, I felt like it needed to be in the deck. But until I went through this process, you know, of, like, looking at what was in my deck, I actually realized, well, hang on a minute, and that card was Mardu Charm. Now, charms are one of these things that you're like, hell yeah, that should totally be in almost any deck that has those colors. They have 3 really good effects, those effects are really resilient, you get to choose the 3, you get to choose which one you use, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
What I found, though, was that Mardu Charm isn't necessarily all that suited to Commander, because it's 3 mana, in red, white, black to either deal 4 damage to a creature, which is not that great in Commander, put 2/1/1 warrior tokens onto the battlefield, they gain first strike. Again, not that great in Commander, because that's basically just like destroy an attacking creature that has 2 toughness. Or, yeah. Target opponent reveals their hand, you choose a non-creature, non-land from it, and they discard that, which is not that great in Commander. But what I was overlooking was, like, the actual utility of the effect. And what I was seeing was, this is a charm, it's in my colors, throw it in. And
yeah, no, that
what
feels.
I've since, yeah, what I've since done is I've taken that card out, you know, reevaluated the deck's need and the format that I'm playing, and I've thrown in an unrelated but better card. And I'm pretty happy with that.
It worked pretty good, too. And also, if you're bolstering with... Oh, is it bolster or is it put a +1/+1 counter?
It just gets a +1/+1 counter on the dragon.
Still good.
Hmm. Bolster would be pretty sweet with Zergo.
I was going to say, because Zergo's probably got the lowest toughness out of most things in your deck.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. In fact, he's generally one of the only creatures in there.
Yeah.
On the board.
So, I mean, there are some other changes as well. Finding cards that just work better for your deck can be a struggle, but when you do, it's a good feeling. I ran a card called Pulse of the Tangle for quite a long time. It was a green sorcery from Darksteel. Cost 1 and 2 green. Put a 3/3 beast into play. If an opponent controls more creatures than you, return Pulse of the Tangle to your owner's hand. So, as long as your opponent controls more creatures than you all the time, you can keep generating 3/3s per turn. But what I found was that in Commander, 3/3s are... 3/3 vanilla creatures tend to be quite irrelevant. And also, I'm sinking 3 mana into this every turn when I'd much rather be doing other things. I'd either lose it or it would stay in my hand the whole time and not get used. And then I found a card called Edric, Spymaster of Trest.
Ah, good card.
It's a 2/2 legendary creature. It costs 1/1 and a green and a blue. Whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller may draw a card. So, that means I have a 2/2 non-vanilla creature, gives my opponents an incentive to attack someone other than me, and rewards me for attacking as well, and I draw cards. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful
thing. What's not to love?
Yeah. So, and even a change as subtle as that has really evened out my draws throughout the game as well. At 3 mana, I can get a potential draw in, well, not a draw engine, but, you know, I can get some draws happening. And no matter when I pull, no matter when I draw Edric, Spymaster of Trest, I'm always happy to see him.
Absolutely.
So.
Cause he just has much more of an impact on the game.
Absolutely.
And I think we both touched on this point here, which is the cards in your deck, I mean, at least I feel anyway, I don't think they should be set in stone, you know? Like, When you build the deck, what you think might be a good card for your deck at the time, and what actually turns out to be a good card for your deck, can generally be very different things. And as you grow as a player, and as you learn different things, your evaluation of cards can change. And I think it's a really good exercise, just as a player in general, to be able to look at things and go, huh, why did I think this was good?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll put up... What we should do, I'm going to put my old Niv-Mizzet deck on Tapped Out as well, and okay. We can link that in the show notes if you like, and you can just
have a look.
Just, yeah, so I mean, we can go into details in maybe a later episode if we want to do a before and after what's in the box, but it's interesting. I mean, you know what, I've got some weird cards in here. I've got I've got Geosurge in a blue-red deck.
That's the massive,
red, cost 4 red.
Yeah, it's like a massive ritual that you get like 8 mana or something like that, and you can only use it to cast creatures and artifact spells.
Yep, but it's an instance and sorceries type deck, so that wasn't being used very well.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would be. Yeah, no, I can imagine that sort of looking at the old build for a deck like that, especially when you're going back to your really early days as a player, is kind of, it's sort of like looking at your high school graduation photos, something like that, where you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although it's very funny to see, there's one card I used to get rid of, and it's come with me through every build of this deck. Even Kamigawa, Shinka the Blood-Soaked Keep, which taps for red or for a red and tap target legendary gets first strike until end of turn. So, I can't get rid of it. I don't know what it is. Yeah. That's my sentimental card. It just follows me.
It's a good card.
It's pretty.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm gonna go ahead and put this on tapped out anyway. Carry on.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I think having pet cards, is really important in Magic. Like, having a connection to cards is, of course, like, you know, the reason we love this game so much is that it's so easy to just develop a connection to it and love certain aspect of it, like, quite a lot. So, of course, having pet cards comes hand in hand with that. You know, there are certain cards that you just love a lot. And I think that's one of these things that actually sometimes can make card evaluation of your deck, like, for the betterment of the deck and for how you play it, quite difficult, you know? I know I've had pet cards in decks that they've been in there for a long time. In fact, I mean, if I went to look through Zergo, actually, fuck, I literally just opened up Zergo, grabbed half the deck just to have a look at it in my hand, and I can see the card on top that exactly I was looking for.
Yeah?
It's a card called Pillage. All right. Now, one of the very, very first products that I ever bought as a Magic player was a set called the Premium Deck Series Fire and Lightning. Now, basically, it appealed to me massively as a player back then, and probably would still buy it now. It was an all-foil set that was mono-red and featured, like, classic cards from all throughout Magic's history of, like, great red spells.
And all was, in like, foil.
And all in foil. All the lands are in foil as well. So there was, like, 4 foil Lightning Bolts, and Grim Lavamancer, and Jackal Pup, and, like, Chain Lightning, and a whole bunch of really cool stuff. And, starting out in Magic, that was the thing that just kicked me off, because I was like, holy crap, some of this stuff is amazing. And it really started my love affair with red. And the card that I picked out is a card called Pillage. And it's not a bad card, and I think it's actually pretty good in Commander. But it's a pet card that I could never see myself cutting. So for 1 red, it's a sorcery that just says, destroy target artifact or land. It can't be regenerated.
Can I just jump in here for a sec? And yeah. Just, in a world where 4 mana is, like, 4 mana in red is basically the standard for destroying a land now.
Yep.
If not more than that now. Pillage is the best value for mana you can get in land destruction, I think. Because it destroys...
Pretty damn close, yeah.
Unconditional artifact or land destruction, and it adds the can't be regenerated tag onto that. That's ridiculous. For 3 mana, holy shit.
It's a good card.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good card. And it's just one of these things that, like, I look at it and I go, look, I mean, I could be running, maybe it's not that great in Commander, you know, but, like, it's, I can blow up a Maze of Ith, or I can blow up, what's a good artifact? I can blow up, like, a
Bosch.
Optic Mirror. Bosch. I can blow up a Bosch. He'd probably just sack the Bosch and throw it at my face, but.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can blow up so many things. I can blow up someone's Soul Ring. I can blow up a Maze of Ith. I can blow up someone's Bashinka, the Blood-Soaked Keep. I don't know. I can't tear myself away from the card because regardless of whether it's necessarily the best thing for my deck or not, it's from one of the early sets that I bought, and it's in foil, and it's got gorgeous artwork, and it's actually a really good card. So.
So what we're trying to tell you, audience members, is that much like anyone working in the medical industry, you're going to get attached to cards and or people, and it's going to break your heart when you're going to have to let them go. I wanted to ask you, Matt, what was your saddest cut from your decks, from your Zergo deck? Like, any deck you've ever built, what was the card removal that upset you the most?
I think, honestly, it was the move... from Tajik to Zergo. And not just changing Tajik into Zergo, but when I moved to Zergo, I put Tajik in the deck. And then taking Tajik out of the deck.
Yeah.
Was one of the hardest things that I've done. Like, we're saying one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's taking a piece of cardboard out of a stack of cardboard. But, Tajik, Blade of the Legion, was this legendary creature from Dragons. He's a 2/2 for 1 red-white. I'm doing this completely off memory. He's a human knight, and might be a soldier. I feel like he's in. And he's got battalion, and he's got indestructible. And his battalion ability is that whenever he attacks with 2 or more creatures, he gets +5/+5. Until, so basically, if he attacks with two other buddies, he's a 7/7 indestructible for four, which is pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But my Tajik deck was very token-based, and it also had this sort of sub-theme where I could wipe the board because Tajik was indestructible. So that was kind of nice. And that became sort of the main element of my Zergo deck, was the wiping the board because my commander's indestructible. And Tajik had this like, he has to attack with two other creatures to be good, because otherwise it's a 2/2 for four indestructibles.
That
great. And Zergo, it generally came into scenarios where it was Zergo and Tajik, you know, or Tajik and Zergo's been dealt with and just another creature that was like, you know, not that great and didn't really get to attack. And it was like, he's not doing his thing anymore.
Well, that's really sad, actually.
It is, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
The deck had moved away from what Tajik needed, and Tajik wasn't needed anymore.
He went home. He went home and put his helmet under his bed and, slept.
There is a nice ending to this story. Because at that time as well, maybe a couple weeks later, I was looking to rework my cube, and I wanted red-white to have a real focus in my cube, so I made it the token generation. Bumped up the number of token generation spells in red and white, and I realized I had an open spot in red-white multicolor. So my foil Tajik is now sitting in there, and he's loving life.
Yay.
But see, he retired.
It's a happy ending, I think.
It's a happy ending.
We sound really sad, but getting attached to cards is a thing, and if you haven't done it already, it will happen.
Yeah, and if you don't think it happens to you, you're a cold-hearted bastard, and you're lying to yourself.
That's right, calling you out.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's just a card you like, but okay. So, Stephen,
yes,
I'm gonna pose the question to you. What is it like? Okay, what is the most often time that this happens to you? Is it where you look at a card and feel like you want to put it in a deck? Is it because you've pulled it in a booster? Is it because you've seen it on the internet? Is it because you had it lying around in your collection and just found out that you own it? Or did a friend tell you about it?
Usually the middle two. It's usually I've looked it up online and I've gone, wow, why do I not have that? Or I found it in my box. I've got my big box of cards, and sometimes I found a Remand. Just randomly, yeah. In my blue cards. Holy crap, that's $16 that I've saved. But yeah, so it most often happens to me in looking through my commons box, actually. And just, that's where most of my deck inspiration comes from too.
Yeah.
Commons, man. It's the backbone of a deck.
It is. I mean, there are the role players that make the cogs move. They're the grease that makes everything go. Sometimes more so than the lands.
It's true.
I know you mean. Like, for me, it's, It can generally be finding stuff in my box to fill out a deck, but when I see a card and want to put it in a deck, it's generally because I've opened it in a booster. Mm-hmm. And mostly how I acquire boosters these days is like prize packs at the store or a pre-release, or I bought a box, and that's basically the only times that I open boosters now. Which means that I've either achieved something because it's a pre-release, or I've won something at like Modern or something like that, and they gave me prize packs. So I'm opening it, and I go, like, I already have an attachment to it if it turns out to be good. You know, I open my pack and I see a Dromoka, and I'm like, oh, better put this in a deck. So like that tends to influence me a lot. Is just, I have acquired this card. I feel a desire to play this card, so I should find a home for
it. Yeah, I get that.
And I think one of that is the reason that I have a cube, is that I had a whole bunch of these like cards lying around that I wasn't playing in like the one or two casual decks I had at the time, and I was like, I should do something with these. Come on, like, I want to play with that, but I don't have a home for it, and I don't want to build an entire home around it. So let's build a cube, find a place for them.
Yeah.
And the cube has since evolved into its own beast. And I think for me, that's actually one of the places that the hardest cuts come from, is finding something that's best for the entire cube environment and making cuts there. Like, I think it's rare that I change things up dramatically in the cube, but when I do, it's very much like, okay, I've thought about this a lot, you know, I need to take this card out, and I have recently acquired this card that would be perfect for this spot. It's going in.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Sun Quan, Lord of Wu.
Lord of Pooh.
Lord of Pooh. The, 4-4, for 4, blue-blue, from the Vault Legends, he gives all your creatures horsemanship, was in the cube for a long time. Since I acquired him, he probably sat in the entire cube all up for about 7 to 8 months.
Yeah.
And, I think in that entire time, he was played twice, because I don't get to draft the cube all that much. And when he wasn't enjoyed. You know? Like, Callum played him in his deck and crushed our face. And I played it, I think with Tyler one time, and she played it, and she was like, wait a minute, so this means that all my guys are unblockable? Yep.
Yeah.
Can you deal with that? Nope.
It's kind of... Oof, sorry. It's quite an unfair card. I don't know. Like, some cards, even though they're really good, can really just fuck up your play group, really.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. Listening to your play group is a big part of having a casual environment. And listening to their thoughts on a card, what they think about it, is quite important. So if someone's not enjoying it, and you kind of agree with them, like, you know, that, yeah, look, I mean, I get it. It's not that fun of a card. And in fact, I'm not really, like, if your fun for the card is not significantly higher than how much they're not enjoying the card, you know, if those scales don't match up, then maybe you should think about changing it out.
Yeah.
But that's a hard decision to come to.
That's a good reason to do it, though. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I can think of a few other reasons. Okay. Why don't we go into this as well? Like, reasons to get rid of cards. So, one.
Good idea.
One, it screws up your play. Like, if the card screws up your play group, right? Or if your entire play group goes, you know what? We really don't enjoy playing you with that thing. The thing you got. Mm-hmm. So Sun Quan's a good example. And tuck effects, although thanks to the rules change as of yesterday, that doesn't apply anymore. But, you know, back in the day when tuck effects used to tuck your commander and you could do nothing about it.
I'll just take a brief pause just here. Yeah. For anyone who isn't aware, I'll put a link in the show notes to the article that details it, but the Commander Rules Committee has officially decreed that a tuck effect, one that shuffles it into the library, is now part of the replacement effect, that if your commander would die or be exiled, you can now, instead of it getting shuffled into the library, you can choose to put it back in the command zone.
I'm pretty sure that the rules should just, I mean, essentially what it is, if your commander would go to a zone other than the command zone or the battlefield, you may have it go to the command zone instead.
Pretty much, and I like that it's now quite uniform.
Yeah, and also, strangely enough, if your commander gets bounced back to your hand, you can send it back to the command zone, although I don't understand why you would do that unless your playgroup is really heavy on discard effects.
If your opponent, like, if you're like, I think you're going to do a Wheel of Fortune, that wouldn't do anything, because it would just go to the graveyard and you, like, put it in the command zone. I don't know. Maybe if it would be cheaper.
Yeah. But it's nice to have the option for whatever cockamamie reason you may have.
Yeah, so continue, Stephen, with reasons to cut a card.
Okay. And we talked a little bit about cards not doing what they're supposed to. Did we talk about cards not doing what they're supposed to?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, I'll give you a good example. Because this is the card that I was saddest about cutting as well. So back in my Niv-Mizzet the Firemind days, I managed to get my hands on a promo full art Melek is a Paragon. Okay? Now, Melek is a Paragon. I'm pretty sure that...
He's a weird wizard.
He is a weird wizard. And he's a weird card too, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, so Melek is a Paragon is a 2/4 legendary creature for 4 and a red and a blue. Play with the top card of your library revealed. If it's an instant or sorcery, you may cast it. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your library, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy. All right, and I'm sure people who have the right deck environment for it absolutely wreck it. You know, countertop or whatever you've got going in your deck. Anyway, I was running this in my mostly creatures Niv-Mizzet the Firemind deck.
Mm-hmm.
And although I started off with a lot of sorceries, it became more green. You know, it picked up another color, it became green, and it just became more creature focused. So I was getting less out of Melek every time I played him, every time I changed my deck. And I got to a point where he was doing nothing. I was so sad having to remove him. I mean, it just, you get to a point where you realize, wow, you actually just don't fit anymore. And it takes a lot of play testing and it takes a lot of introspection and soul searching. But, you know, you get to that.
Sometimes just laying your deck out on the table and going, look, the first things that I'm seeing right now is like creature. And there's you sitting there.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that from this exact same deck. Epic Experiment.
Oh.
Is the same deal.
Yeah.
Epic Experiment, the, you know, X blue red. Was it reveal X card or exile X cards from your library? You may cast instants of sorcery from among them.
Yep. But
cost X or less without paying their mana cost.
Absolutely. And you know what? The sad thing is that was the card that made me want to build an EDH deck.
Yeah.
I mean, that single card was the reason I built the deck. And, but thankfully, Epic Experiment now lives in my Nekazar deck where it lives a life of riches and glory. I suppose another reason is, and it also comes into the, you know, not really fulfilling its purpose reason, but also, if you draw a card, and every time you draw it, you go, wow, that's not what I wanted. Perhaps it's not what should be in your deck.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your play group is tailored to certain play styles, and your deck is, tailored to a certain environment. And if you keep drawing this card and going, you know what, this really doesn't fit in what I'm trying to do right now as well. Because you can goldfish a deck as much as you like, that's fine. But when you play it against other decks, you know, that's when you,
I mean, so. I think, sorry.
That's okay.
Finish your things. I'll just add something.
I mean, that's exactly why I went, oh, Pulse of the Tangle, look good on paper, doesn't work. You know, what was the other one? There was another major part of my deck that I had. Oh, freaking a Dryad Arbor, which is a land, also a creature. But it was just screwing me over. My deck wasn't built to make the most of Dryad Arbor, so I tossed it.
It was just a forest with summoning sickness.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so I'll do that. That's what I'm on here. So, sometimes drawing a card and looking at it and thinking, this is not what I need, is then followed by the words, right now. I had this struggle in, I can't remember what casual deck it was. It was something that I had that was white and it was creature based. And it had a wrath effect. And I think almost any time that I drew that wrath effect, I kept looking at, why would I want to play this? I have so many more creatures right now. I'm just going to mute just a second. I'm going to sneeze. Oh, I can feel it. And I'm back. Anyway, so I kept drawing this card and I kept looking at it and going, ah, now I have so many creatures. Why would I want to blow them all up? And I took it out of the deck. And it wasn't until later that I sort of had the opposite thing where I was playing the deck and I came up in a scenario where I, you know, could have used the wrath and I go, oh, I should have this in the deck as a safety valve for when those situations come up and I do draw it, I can go,
Yeah.
And that was actually like, I did the double thing where I kept looking at it and I went, no, I don't need this. This is not what I need, right? Like every time I draw it, I don't need it. Take it out. It's not doing its purpose. Then later, drawing other cards and looking at those going, I wish this could be X. I think it was Day of Judgment.
Yeah.
And, that's another thing as well, is that, you know, like, we're talking, if things aren't set in stone and you can change things out, you can also change them back once you've done that. Because sometimes, and this is one of those things that happens in Magic, the obvious thing, the obvious thing that you do, you might later think, no, I should change that and take it out. And then, even laterer, you might go, oh, well, hang on a minute. My first thing is actually the smart thing. I did it for the wrong reason, but it's actually now a good fit again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I one of the things I always think about for this is when you're playing like a burn deck, right? And the first thing you do when you're a casual player is you take a lightning bolt and you point it at their face and you go, lightning bolt you. Because you think, aha, that lets me win. And then as you become a better player, you learn, well, hang on, lightning bolt sometimes better saved for their creatures. So you can kill their creatures so you can actually continue burning their face whilst they don't kill you. And then later, as you become a better player, you go, hang on a minute. Maybe I should be pointing at their face sometimes, because I can be very aggressive about that, and I can wait for those moments when I can actually put it at their face, rather than, you know, like, you reevaluate your strategy again and again and again. You actually go, oh, hang on a minute, I actually know definitively that if I keep boop, lightning bolting you in the face, I'm actually going to kill you before you can do anything.
Yeah.
It's this weird thing where the new player reaction is to do a thing that you then learn, no, I shouldn't do that thing. That even later you go, yeah, I probably should do that thing.
Yeah.
That is a weird game sometimes.
It is. But even mistakes you've made before can, and cards you've taken out before can lead to new playstyles or new decks never look at a bad card in your deck and write it off as worthless, because it can all, cards are designed for specific areas, so try and put it somewhere else. If you don't like a card in your deck, take it out, put it somewhere else. Don't just toss it aside. I'm looking at my original Niv-Mizzet deck list, and it just astounds me how much of this made it into my Nekazar deck.
Yeah.
I've got Preordain and Ponder and, I had Spelltwine in this deck. Maybe I should, I've got, Curiosity in here, and I had Curse of Echoes in there for a while, and, there's a lot of stuff in here that's in Nekazar, and I'm just going, wow.
So a large percentage of stuff in another deck that was deemed not fit for that deck actually found a home in something else.
Yeah. Although,
that's interesting.
There are a few cards here that I'd never run ever again, like, Into the Maw of Hell.
Yeah, the what is it, 6 mana, destroy a land and deal 13 to a creature?
Yeah. It seemed badass at the time, but knowing what I know now, no.
Well, yeah, knowing as you know now, you go, all right, well, I could probably spend 6 mana better, to get a similar effect. But you also understand, well, maybe there's a place for this.
Yeah.
You have it at the back of your
mind. I don't know.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why we do this weird card of the week segment is, it's all about evaluating cards and finding things that you haven't seen before, which is what we're doing. You know, finding new cards and finding if they have a place for our deck. And just looking at these cards and evaluating.
Yeah.
Do they have a place?
I have an Act of Treason in this Niv-Mizzet the Firemind deck, which is supposed to be instants and sorceries. Why have I got an Act of Treason in here?
It's a instant and or sorcery.
Yeah, that's some strange things in here. Ah. Like Pilgrim's Eye is in here, which is a 3 mana for a 1/1 flyer that grabs you a basic land.
Not a terrible card.
Not a terrible card, but I could do better, I think. Scroll Thief, which is a 1/3 for 2 and a blue. When it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. I've got no evasion in here, a commander deck is supposed to cater towards your card's abilities, and just seeing it in a instants and sorceries allegedly deck, it's just, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I know you. I know
you. You got to facilitate what your cards do with any deck, really. So it just seems absolutely like a mishmash.
Yeah. So, okay. So we talked about some reasons for for taking cards out. You know, them not pulling their weight, or they're proving toxic in your playgroup and all this kind of stuff. What I'm thinking about is finding cards to fill those gaps is also kind of interesting because. Like, I found myself in a scenario a couple of times, and this happens a lot more with a cube than it does with actual decks, but you're thinking, you know what? And you're sitting in the middle of the game, you're thinking, you know what? I could really use an effect right now, probably staple to a creature, that does, does a thing. And
yeah.
Sometimes it can be quite interesting to think, all right at this moment, right? Best case scenario, what effect would I like to play? And then, going and looking on Gatherer, or MagicCards.info, or whatever, and seeing if there's a card that actually fits that bill, just generally looking and trying to find if something does something very similar.
Yeah, that's how I do it as well. I mean, that's just what you want to do.
Exactly.
I mean, the other thing is, I absolutely encourage people to do this. Go on a Tapped Out or on any website where people actually list their decks and look at what other people have done. I mean, look,
yeah.
Everyone who builds a deck wants to be unique. But let's face it, chances are someone's done something similar to what you're doing. Don't be afraid to look at ideas. You know, don't be afraid to look at other decks and go, you know what? I think they did that a little better. Or I think I can do that a little better and steal some ideas.
Yeah, you know? I wouldn't say steal the ideas, but like it's take inspiration from other people's work. Because your personal experience is like, as a player and a gamer, is enhanced by being able to sort of piggyback off other people's experiences. So, you know, like, say, for example, I was looking to build, you know, a Tiny Leaders deck, and I was building Ashling, and I've never built a Tiny Leaders deck before. So what I did was I went out and I looked at other Tiny Leaders decks that existed. I didn't know how many basic lands to play in that kind of format, and I looked at other people's decks, and I sort of tried to work out the average of what would work, and, you know, what kind of spells are good in this format, that kind of stuff. And that was really valuable, looking at all the other work that everyone else has put in and being able to draw inspiration from that. And then, of course, you can personalize your deck however you want from there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's say, for example, you wanted to build a Nekazar Commander deck. I really want to play to this guy's themes. Well, I'm assuming you did something like this, similar, Stephen, where you looked at other people's Nekazar Commander decks and looked at spells that they play.
Absolutely, I did.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you're like, oh, you know, Wheel of Fortune's a really good spell for this. I wonder if there's a lot of other cards that are like Wheel of Fortune. And then, you might know a couple off the top of your head, but other people's lists might have more than you actually are aware of.
And then with the deck building, I got to a situation where, okay, I'm milling myself out a lot. What can I do to stop that? And that's why I've got a few things that recover my graveyard. So it's, you know, taking inspiration from other people's decks and realizing what the faults are with them and then going, all right.
Absolutely.
Let's go on a gather and see if we can fix this. Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Absolutely.
I mean, it does take, I'll be honest, it takes a bit of practice and it does take a lot of patience and, you know, a lot of reading through cards and a lot of, you know, being willing to sit down and actually learn about it. You know, I mean, it's taken me since New Phyrexia, which is what, 2011? 2010?
2012, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's taken me the better part of 4 years to get to where I am now. You know, I mean, you know, you build the good decks in between, but you look back and you go, wow, my deck building has become so much better since then. And you grow as a player, man. You grow as a player. You grow.
Absolutely.
Look at you go. Oh, I have turned into a public service announcement.
But, I mean, like, I
don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs, kids. Winners don't do drugs.
G.I. Joe.
Because knowing is half the battle. So, yeah, I mean, like, it's one of the main reasons why I think we do this show is we're casual players, you know, we play to just enjoy the game. We're not necessarily trying to get anything out tournament-wise and grind out value that way, but it still really helps to be better players and to understand what we're doing more and understand how to make decks better. So it's one of the reasons I know is I especially look for good topics and stuff to talk about each and every week is to find something to make, you know, you the listeners, you the squires, maybe think about and to grow as a player. Because I know one of the best things I've done is growing as a player and realizing what my strengths are and realizing what I like playing. And, you know, I've realized that I'm quite a spiky player and I like to play really aggressively. And I have certain colors that I'm more prone to and certain colors that I'm adverse to, namely blue. And, taking a complete flip side, the very first intro pack that I ever played with, I don't know if I necessarily bought it, was an Azorius blue-white control thing.
Wow, that could not be further from what you play as now, is it?
Couldn't be further from what I play now and what my comfort zone is, but that's the first thing that appealed to me as a player back then. But it took a lot of playing other people's decks and talking to a lot of other people and going to pre-releases and stuff where you build, you know, things out of what you have and learning what I liked best. And I think that's really important. Or at the very least, very helpful in being a good player is being able to look at yourself as a player and know what you like, know what you don't like, and know where your weaknesses are.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. So you bought the blue, the the Zorius deck. I'm just trying to see, what was the first deck I ever bought? Because I, you know, I've been dabbling in Magic for a while, but the first intro pack I bought was, oh, was that it? Holy crap. It was, the Blood and Fire 2012 intro pack was, with, it had Flame Blast Dragon as the feature card.
So what colors was that?
It was red and black and had a lot of interesting things in it. And that was my first deck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I started off, and it's been interesting to see. I know we're doing a lot of navel gazing this episode, but this has actually been quite insightful.
It has been, yeah. It really has. Like, I'm looking at the deck list of this Azorius build, and I, like, there's a couple of elements that I could see myself playing, but wow.
Yeah.
Actually, looking at it, there's the two rares out of it were Archon of the Triumvirate and Righteous Authority. Archon of the Triumvirate being a 4/5 flyer for 7 that when it enters, it detains 2 non-land permanents. And Righteous Authority is an enchantment for 3 white blue, and it's an aura. Goes on a creature. The creature gets +1/+1 for each card in your hand. And at the beginning of your draw step, you draw an additional card. So it's like a personal Howling Mine. I have these still kicking around somewhere. Not my rares binder, because they're not that great, but kicking around somewhere.
Yeah.
It's interesting to know that. Geez, when was this? This was Return to Ravnica. This was September 25th, 2012. At the very least 3 years ago, it came out. Probably about 2.5 years ago that I bought it. That, I still have those.
Yeah, I still got most of this deck kicking around, although I'm kicking myself now for having traded away my intro pack foil, Flame Blast Dragon, as little as it's worth. I'd love to have one again.
That is a shame. Yeah, because you've got one in your commander deck.
But, oh, man, I remember now. There is a copy of, Vampire Outcasts in this deck, which is a 2/2 for 2/2 black. It's a vampire with lifelink and Bloodthirst 2. And I remember looking at that and going, you know what? Maybe I should build vampires. And now this was pre-Innistrad. So vampire tribal wasn't
a thing.
Wasn't hot shot back then. And this, the friend of mine, same friend who recommended Commander to me as a format, you know, it's basically said, hey, well, look, I've got a whole bunch of black cards. Do you want to have a go? And that's where my vampire deck came from. So this bloody intro pack was the source of so many, many things.
Yeah.
But see, this is not a deck I would play. So this deck runs on a mechanic called Bloodthirst, which is if an opponent was dealt damage this turn, this creature enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it, or however many counters.
Yeah, a certain amount of +1/+1 counters, you get to the Bloodthirst number.
Yeah, so meaning you had to damage an opponent before playing the creature. But, see, I initially, and I guess still now, I still struggle to decide whether it's worth attacking or not. I like having things on the board. I love putting things on the board. But with a Bloodthirst mechanic, you have to do things in a very specific order. Whereas I like doing things once I've already got stuff out.
Yeah.
I like battlefield interactions. Not so much organizing myself, because I'm not a very organized person. You guys, if you ever watch me, not that you will, it's an audio podcast, but if you guys ever watch me play a game of Magic, I'm sure everyone gets sick of me going, yeah, I'm going to play that. Oh, wait, no. I'm just going to untap that. And then I'm going to play the other. No. Oh, wait. Maybe I should. Oh, wait. I forgot to draw. Fuck. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is you taking 2 minutes out to process your, like, your main phase, and you realize you haven't even drawn for the turn yet.
Yeah, so I tend to play like a bit of an idiot. So having a deck that relies heavily on organizing yourself before you play, not my style.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things I'm finding about this Azorius Advanced deck as well, is that it's basically a lot of, like, very sort of response answers, you know, giving things, like, detaining them for the turn so that you can do stuff, or bouncing a creature back to the hand, all this kind of things. It's very sort of reactive control with kind of an element of chipping away at your opponent. And I would have loved to play the Bloodthirst deck. You know, I'm all about sequencing my plays in the correct way and getting the maximum advantage out of a turn.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, you know, there's so much, like, so far that we've come as players.
So good.
So well, the Magic has so much of a depth to it.
So that was the first deck you bought. What was the
first deck I played, I think.
What was the first thing that actually properly got you into Magic? Because I can tell you, mine was the Sorin v. Tybalt dual deck.
Wow, that late, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So I bought the Blood and Fire intro pack, and I kind of dabbled in Magic for a bit, and then I stopped for about a year, and then I saw the SVT dual deck, and I thought, you know what? Maybe I could teach a friend how to play, and we'll have two decks, and then I realized, actually, I want all the cards in both decks.
Well, I think I was saying it previously in the episode. It's the premium deck series, Fire and Lightning.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and because like that deck, I'll pop a link in the show notes. I'll remind myself right now when I'm listening to this later. Pop a link in the show notes to this list because it's as much as it is like a whole bunch of just good cards that I happen to really enjoy playing and a strategy that I really enjoy playing, and the fact that it's all foil. It's also a history lesson, like. In card form, you know, you could show me a card like Jackalplup and I'd be like, oh, that's cool. It's a 2/1 for one that has a downside. That's interesting. That looks like a very aggressive creature and I like playing aggressively. But the premium deck series pack did a really good job of like this little booklet that came with it, like telling you about the history of these cards. And, you know, this is the Jackalplup used to be this card in, you know, way back in the day. Yeah. I love that stuff. I love like the history of Magic and seeing how far it's come. So it wasn't just that pack telling me as a player, like giving me an avenue for something to enjoy. It was also letting me in on an aspect of the game that I didn't even know I would enjoy, which was the historical aspect.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
That's, man.
So, that pack is actually like quite formative to my experience because I know I have like probably 13, 14 lightning bolts in my possession, but those four foil lightning bolts that came with the set, I know I have one in Zergo. I know I have one in the cube. I know I have one in, I think, no, it's not in my Ashling the Pilgrim deck. But the other two, I think at the very least, I traded one away, which I don't regret, because I got something really nice for it. I can't remember what it was. Might have been a shock land, actually.
Yeah.
Which, trading away a foil lightning ball for a shock land actually was a pretty good deal. And, I think I might have given one to Callum, maybe. But it's, like, those four lightning bolts, I had, like, a connection to, and they stayed with me for a long time. And, like I said, I think I definitely still have two of them. So, this has been a really good episode for me. Not necessarily because of the topic, which I liked the topic that we were dealing with, but it's been very introspective.
It's good. So I'll try that again. Apologies, Squires, because we have been, like I said before, navel gazing quite a bit. But you know, we joke about stuff a lot, but we quite seriously consider Magic to be a.
I want to put this out there. I think Magic is the best game in the world.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, and I mean that. I mean that in no small number as well.
And it's interesting how, I suppose with anything you do, looking back and seeing how you've changed because of something, you know, I feel like my deck building and I guess critical thinking has improved a little bit because of Magic and, you know, looking at cards and doing stuff. And it's also been so wonderfully social, having a good time. You know, Magic, great. Screw you guys.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably like Magic the Gathering already, so you don't need to hear this from us. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, Magic holds a very important place in my life, especially right now, because it is my favorite pastime. It is, what I do basically when I'm not doing anything else, you know. If it's not playing Magic, it's related to Magic, because I do things related to Magic a lot more than I actually play. And, you know, it's sort of what defines me as a person because it's something that I can feel confident about being good at. Because it's something I hear from you guys all the time that I'm the best player or whatever in the play group or however you want to word it. But it's something I've put time into to look at myself as a player and learn to do that introspection and become better at something that I enjoy and really apply myself to a craft. And that's been really important to me. Like developing me as a person. And then of course starting this podcast has just been this amazing experience.
Yeah.
So
thanks for listening to our podcast, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cause
sorry, stuff. We got a bit mushy on you.
Yeah.
Especially I got a bit mushy on you. But
like, I'll personally hug you guys one day. I'll meet all of you in a dirty alley somewhere and I'll give you all a big hug. Fuck you.
Yeah.
No,
Steven in a nutshell, everybody.
Yeah. We do a lot of sort of introspective stuff when Callum is in here. Here's to you, buddy, and the derangement you bring to the cast.
Absolutely. We don't have any, emails or tweets or whatever this week, but that's cool.
But we have 4 new followers since we last checked. We got 8 followers. Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're out there and you're a follower of Squirecast, like, we personally love you. We will meet you in a dark alley and give you a hug.
Or in public, you know, we can do that too.
Oh no. I feel very deeply about, this. It's a trust thing, Matt. It's a trust. Okay.
All right. Cool. I meant to say cool, but I said fool, and I feel like that's actually more appropriate right now.
Yeah. I don't know what to do with the Twitter page, by the way, because
tweet like about stuff.
Random spoilers and then,
Episode updates.
And while that's cool and all, I've been checking out other people's Twitter feeds and, you know, they're running contests and polls and we gotta get big, Matt. We gotta get big.
Well, what the hell is that?
Sorry, my chair is squeaking like a mofo.
Okay, you mean like a mouse though?
Like a house though.
Like a okay, I'm not going to do this. I think for Twitter, and I guess the same to the squires out there to listen to us. If you are listening, and at the very least, if you enjoy this within any capacity, if you don't enjoy listening to us, why? like why have you taken time out of your day to do this? Maybe you just needed background noise, whatever. You know, it seems weird, but just like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or whatever. Just send us an email that just says, I enjoy the show. Like literally that word for word. Hey, I enjoy the show.
Yeah, we even,
We appreciate it. And, I mean, maybe there'll come a time where we have enough Twitter followers or whatever that we can start doing things. Cause I'd love to just, let everybody know about things, hold a contest or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, nice to, and also I'm really keen to get some co-hosts on this thing, man. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so I say co-hosts, I mean, like, from other casts.
Yeah, and, you know what, I'm going to put this on the air right now.
Ooh.
You don't necessarily have to be a podcaster for us to be interested in you. If you, out there in listener, and I know this is opening it up fairly wide, but if you out there in listener, enjoy the show, and you'd love to talk to us, we would love to talk to you. And, pop us an email. Maybe we can organize something for you to be on the show.
Wow, just putting it out there, far out.
That could be fun.
Yeah, that sounds good.
We live in Australia, so it's not like say we're gonna have many chances to meet a lot of our, cause a lot of our listeners are American, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So, yeah, talk to you on Skype.
An episode. You know what? I'm actually fucking keen. Oh, I'm so keen. So
on that note, anything you want to sign off with, Stephen?
I am very happy with my life as a Magic the Gathering player.
Me too.
I think I might build another deck tonight.
I know the feeling. So, from all of us here at Squirecast, and especially from other of us that can't be here tonight, you know, Callum and Chris and Robbie and all this kind of stuff, and Tyler, having been on one episode, from all of us involved with the Squirecast, family and the community and all that kind of stuff, thank you. Thank you, all the squires out there who have ever downloaded an episode, listened to it in the background, whatever. It means a lot to us. But, aside from the mushy stuff, my name's been Matt.
And my name's been Stephen.
Yep, there it is.
every fucking week.
Every fucking week.
This fucking guy is fucking Bean Stephen, this fucking guy. Damn it.
I love you, buddy. And, I love you too, squires, and I will catch you, and we will all catch you, on the next episode of Squirecast.
Like herpes.
Yep. Just like herpes.
Yes.
So much chocolate already.
Okay. I can hear you whispering.
I know, that's the funny part.
Yeah. But, Hanko. Alright. I have food.